The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, I am Avra Lewis with the North Carolina Reading Service, and for the next half hour, I will be reading to you from Essence Magazine. The first article is titled, Real Talk About the Great Renegotiation. Three Black Women Pull Back the Curtain on How Much They Actually Earn. Being a Black woman in America means realizing that doing everything right may not always be enough, especially when it comes to her paycheck. The numbers are stark. On average, Black women are paid just 63 cents for every dollar that a non-Hispanic white man makes. For Black women who work full-time, this discrepancy adds up to a medium wage gap of $2,009 a month, $24,110 a year, and $964,400 over a 40-year career, according to the National Women's Law Center. Additionally, a report by PayScale, which tracks national compensation trends, revealed that even when job characteristics are equal, Black women receive the lowest lifetime earnings compared to 11 other demographic groups, including American Indian women, Pacific Islander women, and Asian women. This troubling gap suggests that Black women stand to lose more than $1 million over the course of their lifetimes when compared to white men. Confronted by the sobering statistics, Black women are speaking out more and initiating open conversations with one another about how much they're getting paid. This uptick in financial candor has been described as the Great Renegotiation, a byproduct of the pandemic-fueled Great Resignation, which saw workers leaving their jobs in droves due to less than ideal working conditions. In a similar vein, the Great Renegotiation refers to the large group of American workers who are demanding better pay from current or prospective employers. These three Black women from different walks of life share a common through line. They understood their worth and demanded it be fairly recognized. Here, they share challenges faced and lessons learned as they renegotiated pay, and how you can do the same. Ivy Summer, age 32, position, diversity, equity, and inclusion consultant, salary $25,000 a year, location formerly San Francisco, now Greece. Between 2017 and 2019, Summer was making $48,000 per year as a contracted project coordinator with tech startup Nextdoor in San Francisco. But the pay wasn't enough for her to have savings and afford the life she wanted. Shortly before the pandemic, she decided to become a digital nomad. She moved to Greece with her husband to help build more equitable workplaces as a diversity, equity, and inclusion DEI consultant. Now, although her income has been nearly cut in half, she says she's happy with her choice. When I got my degrees, I did think I would be making more than I am now, says the Ohio native, referring to her BS in communications and the MBA she earned from San Francisco University in 2015. I worked in the Twitter building at a successful company, yet couldn't land a full-time position, despite several attempts to have conversations with management about my future there. Although she enjoyed working for Nextdoor, she made the tough decision to move out of the Bay Area in February 2019. It was too expensive for what she earned, and the job she loved never fit to make her a permanent employee. As a DEI consultant, one of my duties is to live my values, she explains. Pay transparency is something I freely discuss with my clients because pay equity is incredibly important to weave into our lives. It's time for all of us to talk more openly about money. Sherry Obilum, MD, age 34, position emergency room physician, salary $200,000 a year plus $12,000 to $15,000 in stock options. Location, Houston. Even though ER physician salaries are supposed to be preset in medicine, women doctors are generally paid less than male doctors, said Obilum. This is extremely frustrating, and I've always wondered why it's considered so taboo to talk about something as important as our salaries. Obilum says she has facilitated money conversations even when those around her weren't eager to be as forthcoming. Early on in my career, I would ask people, how much do you make? Indeed, she started proactively comparing salary information while still in medical school. I would ask the seniors above me who were getting ready to graduate how much they were expecting to be paid, she recalls. I just wanted to know what to expect, so I would know how to demand the best for myself. Christina Wilson, age 36, position senior recruiter, salary $127,500 a year, location Chicago. When Wilson graduated college in 2007, she thought she'd go into healthcare because she loved helping people. Little did she know that she'd built a career around doing just that, but in a completely different way. Her current job as a senior level recruiter includes helping her clients and fellow recruiters navigate tough conversations about pay transparency. Interestingly, the same assistance she is now able to offer others was what she used to advocate for herself in past workplace environments. I have often been the only Black woman professional on an HR team for an entire organization, she reveals. After joining the organization, I would find out that my peers who do the same exact work as me are making anywhere between $10,000 to $15,000 more. That's infuriating. She suggests that such inequity has been allowed to happen for as long as it has because of unspoken cultural cues. The issue for Black millennials is that we've been taught to keep people out of our finances, she says. But that's harmful because we're not privy to what others are being paid. An employer might try to justify an offer based on your previous salary history. The problem with that is we are already many steps behind our non-Black counterparts. Fortunately, Wilson paid close attention to the great resignation trends and realized that she needed to be among the mass of workers leaving inequitable work situations. Since then, she has taken her own advice and negotiated her way into a salary that reflects her worth and is on par with her peers. The next article is titled, 10 Reasons Why Lafayette is the Happiest City in Louisiana. Lafayette has been named the happiest city in the U.S. by the Wall Street Journal's Market Watch. The people here have a pure joy of life. Visiting the heart of Acadiana, you'll feel the friendliness of the people, the warmth of the hospitality, the amazing comfort foods, and the electric energy of the music. Here are 10 things that make Lafayette happy. Family friendly. Lafayette is exceptionally family friendly. Children are welcome at restaurants, attractions, and festivals. You'll find many fun-filled activities from putt-putt and trampoline parks to sports complexes, splash pads, a children's museum, and a science museum. People, in the mid-1700s, the area was settled by refugees expelled from their homes in Acadia, Canada, against all odds and 2,000 miles from their home. They were determined to start a new and better life, and their spirit remains today. Great climate. South Louisiana summers are filled with sunshine and winters are mild and comfortable, rarely dipping below 50 degrees. Affordability. Lafayette's hotels, attractions, and restaurants offer more reasonable prices than neighboring cities, so visitors and locals get a lot more. French culture. Because it's French Canadian ancestry, Lafayette feels like a little pocket of France that's not too far from home. French immersion is offered at local public schools. A French music festival is held each April, and on stages around town, many musicians sing in French. Music. Acadiana is home to Cajun, Zydeco, and Swamp Pop music played with instruments like washboards, accordions, triangles, and fiddles. Local musicians have won an impressive 16 Grammy Awards. Head to one of the many dance halls or live music venues for a foot-stomping good time. Festivals. Every week of the year, you're bound to find a festival in Acadia. Locals celebrate everything from music, art, and food to shrimp, crawfish, and frogs. Festival International de Louisiana in the spring hosts hundreds of performing and visual artists from some 15 French-speaking countries around the world. Festival celebrates local culture with food, music, art, and dance every fall in October. Arts. Lafayette's rich history, culture, and scenery provide perpetual inspiration for the arts. Lafayette is home to a symphony orchestra, the Hilliard Art Museum, the Heyman Performing Arts Center, Acadiana Center for the Arts, and a plethora of local galleries. Notable natives include world-renowned Blue Dog artist George Rodriguez and architect A. Hayes Town. Small town charm. Lafayette exudes small town charm with its quaint and walkable downtown designed in the 1800s. Nearby towns like Brex Bridge and New Iberia also offer main streets with local shops and restaurants worth exploring. Tabasco. Every meal is made better with Tabasco sauce, which is produced right here in Acadiana. Visit the local factory, explore the nearby gardens, then stock up on the various flavors of Tabasco so you never have to eat a bland meal again. The next article is titled The Enigmatic Janet Jackson. As she prepares to take to the stage again, the music legend offers a tantalizing glimpse of the woman she is today. Ooh, what's the first thing that comes to mind when I see that? Janet Jackson asks as I hold up the iconic cover of her 1993 album, Janet. The world-shaking affirmation of sexuality that upended her public persona. She was trying to come out of that shell and be accepting of herself and of who she was physically, she says after reflecting for a beat. Janet Demita Jo Jackson is indulging me in a game. I've put all of her album art in a tote, and now I'm getting her quick read on the women before her. She has no idea which cover I'll grab next, and nor do I. And the grin that stretches those famous high cheekbones of hers is both mischievous and suspicious. I draw the next album, Discipline. Just a hot mess, Jackson says, wrinkling her nose for dramatic effect. I'm joking, but truly what really comes to mind when I look at that is Jermaine Dupri. I draw a few more. Control, Innocence, All For You. Someone who was happy and ready to move on. 20-year-old. A tough time, a tough period in my life, she says, her voice fading away. Jackson is curled up in a leather armchair inside a private lounge at Heathrow Airport in London, the city where she's raising her 5-year-old son, Issa. She's dressed in baggy black sweats. Her waist-length locks are pulled into a sleek high bun, and she's serene and measured throughout our hour-long conversation. Just a few days before her 56th birthday, she's flying to Las Vegas to honor her friend, Mary J. Blige, at the Billboard Music Awards, a risk-taking innovator who revolutionized black cultural expression in the 1980s and broke barriers for women in music. Jackson is a capital S superstar, a global icon, and rock and roll hall of famer with incomparable impact. She's built musical universes that centered pleasure, personal agency, self-esteem, spirituality, identity, race, and social justice. She's been a singular force for close to 4 decades, but she is also an enigma. We see her, we hear her, we feel her, but we don't truly know her. She's kept us at arm's length by design. Jackson's fame and ancestry reside in such a rarefied space that it feels silly to offer a sizzle reel of the triumphs, scandals, rumors, and lore that have shaped our perception of her. The ways in which we thought or talked about Jackson's career and her interior life have largely been informed by the half century of mythology surrounding her family. But lately, we've been reconsidering her legacy, what it must have cost her to break ground as a black woman in America, what she endured as the youngest in a family as scrutinized and idolized as hers, our longing for Jackson to lift the veil and let us in has never faded. It's why her 4-hour self-titled documentary, which debuted in January, brought record views. The project was her way of reclaiming a narrative lost to gossip, cultural critique, media coverage, and her own preference for keeping the world at bay. It was also her way of telling us what she wanted to on her terms. There's more to be said, of course. There's always more to be said when it comes to Jackson. And we know her at least well enough to know that anything more she chooses to share will make it into her music. Not that she's entirely ready to tell us when to expect it. Still, for the next hour, with Essence, she drops a couple of unexpected gems. Listen in. Essence asks the question, did the documentary help you better understand anything about your past selves? I realized certain patterns I had in my personal life, in my career. Certain things I never thought about. 5 years is a good amount of time to have someone follow you around like that. Essence asks the question, I imagine making the documentary woke up a lot in you. How did you process that? Have you processed that? For me, it was what it was, whether you liked it or not. It's my life story and my family. It was important for me to do it because I had the opportunity to tell my story and not have someone tell it for me. I know I got it right. I was being completely honest, but still, even in that honesty, my mother could have called and said, "Oh, baby, I didn't like this part." And that was the nervous part, because you never want to disappoint, you know? And when she called, "Oh," she said, "Baby, I saw your documentary. I loved every minute of it. That was everything for me right there." Essence asks the question, "You're back on stage and performing live at Essence Festival of Culture this year, but how are things going in the studio? Where are you with new music?" It's so funny because I see the fans asking, "When are we going to get Black Diamond? Will you please release?" Sometimes things happen that you don't expect to happen, and you have to figure things out, or you're in a space in your life when you have to take a step back and take a break for a minute. Even though it's something that I absolutely love, it is still my work, my job. There will be music at some point. Exactly when, I can't say just yet, but there will be. I love it too much not to do it. This is all I know. There's so much that I want to do, but my number one job is being a mama. Essence asks the question, "I want to go back to 1986 to Control and how it pioneered New Jack Swing. As the album came together, was there a moment when either you or Jimmy Jam or Terry Lewis thought the music was breaking ground?" "No," Janet responded. Essence said, "No?" "I can honestly say no. It was going in and just creating, being thankful and excited about creating, ideas flowing left and right. I remember Jimmy telling me something Teddy Riley had mentioned, that when he heard All Right, it gave him this spark, this idea of this New Jack Swing. But it was never like, oh, this is going to be a game changer. I liked doing things in different registers, not always singing in the same key. Even if it's uncomfortable, let's try other stuff." Essence asked, "Do you feel you've got your proper due as a songwriter and producer, particularly when it comes to innovating R&B? Janet responded, "I've heard Jimmy and Terry tell me we haven't. I've heard fans tell me we haven't. Other artists have said the same thing. That never crossed my mind. That's not important to me. Whether I did or didn't, to be quite honest, it's really the body of music touching people and how it impacts their lives that matters to me. It's not the accolades. I honestly don't think about that stuff." Essence asked the question, "What felt revealing about the documentary was getting a glimpse of how you reacted to your ascent in the industry. Has your idea of success evolved from when you were just starting out?" "I've never been that person to have my awards on display. There's nothing wrong with it. That's just not me. Being able to wake up and see my baby another day, the space I might be in at that moment within my soul, what I've accomplished within myself, how far I've come from that child there to the woman that I am today. That's success. If you came to my home, you would never know. If you did not know who I was, that I am an entertainer. I don't have one award on my wall." So Essence asked, "Where are all of your awards?"
"At a warehouse," Janet responded.
"I'm just saving them for my baby. Whatever he wants to do with them, I remember when Jermaine and I were together, he said to me, 'Where are your Grammys? Why don't you have your Grammys?' So I had them brought over because he wanted them out. So that's just what I did. Just the Grammys, nothing else. After we went our separate ways, they went back in the warehouse and haven't come out since."
Essence asked the question, "During your Vegas residency, you opened your show with Empty from the Velvet Rope. I never thought I'd see you perform that record. If it's okay, I'd love to play it for us."
"Sure," Janet responds. She begins to sing along. "My deepest fears, my fantasies, confide in you what no one knows, but it feels so real."
Essence said, "That's such a powerful record for this digital world we live in now."
Janet responded, "I've always liked that song so much. That's a real personal one for me. I'm sitting here thinking, should I say or should I not? It's no big issue, but that song is about a fan. That's when we first started being able to go into chats."
Essence said, "Really?"
Janet responded, "He doesn't know who he is. I've never told him who he is."
Essence responded, "That makes me think about how technology has allowed us to have profound connections with one another, digitally, sometimes without ever meeting or knowing what the other person looks like in real life."
Janet responded, "And that was actually it. I didn't know what he looked like in real life. I'd never seen him, but we would always chat. I don't think I ever told Jimmy or Terry about him. It could have been anyone. You need a certain voice, not buttering you up or trying to kiss you, just someone being real with you, saying the things you need to hear that day or that week or in that moment. He was very special to me and still is. We don't talk anymore, but I think about him all the time."
Essence asks the question, "Are there any records you won't touch on stage, either because they are too hard emotionally or you dislike them?"
Janet responded, "Yeah, there are ones that take you to a place where you are already exhausted and it would be too exhausting to go there. There definitely are a couple."
Well, we have run out of time for today's episode of Essence. We hope you enjoyed it and be sure to listen next time. I am Avra Lewis, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Essence is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call us at 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.